Well, now it's good to welcome back Brian Hughes, who, as I'm sure you know by now, is consultant solicitor of Shenfield-based Rayner Hughes. Now, I believe you're returning to a subject we've covered previously, Brian, divorce, but you're going to bring us up to date with that, and you've got something to brag about as well.
Yes.
Come on, then.
Yes, indeed, Scott. I'm returning to divorce because it's very much in the news these days.
But yeah.
Before I talk about divorce, I'd like to make a brief mention of a case we won in the Supreme Court a week or so ago. It is of great significance to employees who are sacked on grounds that are not the real grounds for their dismissal.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, our client, who worked for the Royal Mail as a media specialist, made a protected disclosure under whistleblowing law relating to potential regulatory breaches. She was subsequently dismissed for alleged poor performance. However, the Supreme Court ruled that if the person's line manager decides that the employee should be dismissed for whistleblowing, but hides behind an invented reason, which the decision maker, in this case the Royal Mail, adopts, then the reason for dismissal is the hidden reason. The court's decision relates not only to whistleblowers, but also protects employees taking family leave, raising health and safety issues, or asserting statutory rights. It should make employers think twice before hiding behind an alleged reason and dismissing someone who is in fact acting within the law and within their rights.
So it's surprising, isn't it, that no one's challenged this before?
Well, yeah, I agree, absolutely. And it's particularly good news that this decision by the Supreme Court has now established a precedent which employers and employees should very much bear in mind in future. Spurious or fabricated reasons will be ignored. And this brings me back in a strange way to the subject of divorce.
Really? How you made that link then, Brian?
Well, you know, you had to link it somehow.
Well, I know. I'm very impressed.
Well, this is the case of Owens versus Owens. Mrs. Owens said that her marriage was loveless and had broken down. She petitioned for divorce in 2015 after moving out of the family home. But in an extremely unusual move, her elderly husband contested his wife's petition and disputed the 27 incidents of unreasonable behaviour on which he'd based her case. The judge agreed that the marriage had broken down, but dismissed Mrs. Owens' petition, describing the 27 incidents as flimsy and exaggerated. Well, not surprisingly, Mrs. Owens was both surprised and upset by the ruling and took her petition all the way to the Supreme Court in 2018, only to be disappointed again when five judges decreed that a joyless marriage is not a strong enough reason to warrant a divorce if the other party didn't agree to it. The court maintained that the incidents of unreasonable behaviour claimed by Mrs. Owens were simply examples of what might reasonably be expected to occur during any normal marriage. No marriage is hassle-free, and many are loveless and joyless. But occasional arguments or the fact that the marriage is loveless and joyless or joyless is no ground for asserting unreasonable behaviour. Mrs. Owens was told that she'd have to wait 5 years from 2015, when the parties had been separated, to obtain a divorce without Mr. Owens' consent.
So what was the upshot?
Well, that case brought to the fore the concept of no-fault divorce. As I mentioned in my last talk on this subject, there used to be four statutory grounds for divorce. The first, used as far back as Henry VIII, was non-consummation of the marriage. The other three were cruelty, which is now called unreasonable behaviour. The third was adultery, and the fourth was 5 years' desertion. Proving the grounds for divorce caused untold misery to couples and their children, and the only people who really benefited were the divorce lawyers. But in 1973, attempts were made to end the blame culture that had previously existed by the passing of the Matrimonial Causes Act. Divorce by consent after 2 years was introduced, or after 5 years' separation without consent. Both took a great deal of stress and expense out of divorce, but lawyers remain very much involved by the financial implications of divorce and the way in which divorce proceedings are structured. First of all, one has to obtain a decree nisi. Nisi is the Latin word for unless.
Unless what?
Unless the reasons are fabricated. Mrs. Owens didn't even get that far. If not considered fabricated, a decree nisi will be granted, but that's only halfway to the actual divorce. One has to get a decree absolute to end a marriage.
So what's the current state of play with regard to the law on divorce?
The introduction of divorce by consent was helpful, but many spouses have not been prepared to go down this route and still go to battle on the grounds of unreasonable behaviour or adultery, usually in an attempt to humiliate the other party, justify themselves, or alternatively, to limit or increase the amount they have to pay out or the amount they hope to gain. Financial issues are always going to be difficult, especially where children are involved, but they're going to be even more difficult where fault is being bandied about. So Parliament has had a rethink about the whole process.
With what result, Brian?
MPs, especially those who've been through divorce themselves, have concluded that what can start as an amicable parting of the ways often develops into acrimony as soon as any implication of fault is introduced. So just 6 weeks ago, in January, the Divorce, Dissolution and Separation Bill entered Parliament. Now, this bill, which is yet to become an act, envisages no-fault divorce. No one has to accuse anyone of anything. If the marriage breaks down, well, it's broken down. There will be no need to make accusations against one's spouse. If the bill becomes an act, as I hope it will limit antagonism and help families to move on with their lives. The impact of divorce is most marked on children, and this will lessen the impact.
Well, that seems eminently sensible, so let's hope it goes through. But I just wondered if you wanted to bring up the subject of mediation, which you raised last time.
Yes, mediation still exists. You still have to consider mediation, and it remains a prerequisite to the presentation of a divorce petition. The other thing I really want to mention concerns the plea made by Sir Andrew Macfarlane, the president of the Family Division for England and Wales. Incredibly, he has recently urged law firms to make a donation to keep the crisis court system functioning. In most cases, couples are being granted decrees absolute unexpectedly, that's to say, you know, before the financial settlement, because of staff errors, and putting the financial settlements, which invariably have to be finalised before the granting of a decree absolute, at risk. And fathers becoming estranged from children because contact arrangements are taking so long to negotiate. He wants law firms to fund a charity to provide support for nearly 160,000 people clogging up the system.
Crikey.
By appearing in court without a lawyer. I know, that's incredible, isn't it? 160,000.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Sadly, he has overlooked the fact that lawyers are also feeling the pinch financially by the withdrawal of legal aid and the closure of courts. The net result is that the whole family court system is in free fall, resulting in many people failing to pursue their rights to see their children or make financial claims due to the lack of legal aid. Ultimately, of course, this reduction in the funding of legal aid may prove to be a false economy, since the state will have to pick up the tab for people who become dependent on other forms of assistance. The Ministry of Justice have issued their usual bland statement that everything is, in fact, getting better. I don't know. In most cases, they say, we aim to help people avoid the courts, many of which have been closed anyway, by providing early legal advice. But who is providing this early legal advice? That's not clear, given that legal aid is, by and large, not available for it. I think they mean a couple of pages in the Ministry of Justice website, but that's all I can think of.
Well, Brian, you've really got on your soapbox this month. I almost don't dare to ask what subject you might be looking at next time around.
Well, I'm not entirely sure yet, but I'll try and talk about something topical. I'm thinking along the lines maybe of cohabitation and people who don't get married or have a civil ceremony and how they find themselves when their partner, spouse, dies.
When it all goes skew-whiff.
Well, yeah, you know, and yeah. They don't get what they think they're going to get.
Right. Fair enough. Well, we'll look forward to that.